Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hello there, everyone. You're welcome again to the Game on Sunday podcast. Michael Lester here with you. Good to have you along. And I am joined again this week by Tomás Mulcahy to talk hurling, Martin Carney to talk, of course, football, and to reflect and to look forward to what's coming up over the next week or so in terms of Gaelic games. Gentlemen, how are you keeping? How are we all doing?
Not a bother, Michael. Not a bother, Tomás.
Yeah, we're all very good, Michael. All very good. Yeah.
Very good.
A bit jealous of a man behind the scenes and Mr. Paul Burns to say that he was in Las Vegas on Sunday night. He said he got close to Taylor Swift. I don't know how close he got, but...
Well, I wouldn't like the boyfriend.
Well, can I just say, knowing Paul, to explain to people, Paul works with us here on the podcast, but he's a former editor of the Sunday Game.
Yes.
And knowing Paul very well down through the years, he would have got as close to Taylor Swift as was possible to get.
Oh, Paul, yeah, I was all jealous already. No, we're all praying for a happy death at our age.
Anyway, listen, well, I tell you what, that was a great gig. It was never been at a Super Bowl, mainly because I'm not that particular interested in American football. But have you guys ever been to Las Vegas?
No, never there.
No, I haven't.
Never there.
No.
Oh, jeez, it's unreal. I mean, it's everything that you would expect, like the hype and the myth of this city in the middle of the desert, kind of, you know. But it's one of those places everybody, if they could, should go to as home stage, kind of, you know. But you'd only need to spend 2 or 3 days in it, max, because after that you'd be a complete head wreck, you know. Martin, we were down one morning, myself, my wife Anne, because we were taking a helicopter trip up to the Grand Canyon.
Wow!
But you come down to this lobby in the hotel, and it's a nice hotel. And there were people playing slot machines at 6 o'clock in the morning. One of them, by the way, that I happened to notice was a nun with a credit card plugged into the slot machine. And she was just sitting there pressing buttons, kind of. You know, I think she was still half asleep, but she was every 15, 20.
He was in charge of recruitment, Michael.
I don't know who was
he was gone. Well.
Nuns on the run, huh?
Nuns on the run.
Why didn't anyway. They get credit cards? I was she winning? Was she winning, Michael?
Well, she was sitting there looking a bit glum, so I presume. But in actual fact, over in a corner of the lobby, they had this display and this big cardboard cutout of some person who had won the previous week $1 million on the slot machines.
Oh my God.
Wow.
And needless to say, of course, anywhere you go in the world, there's an Irish bar And in this particular hotel, the bar in the hotel was called the Nine Fine Irishmen.
That's right. So,
you managed to find it, you did, yeah.
We managed to find it, we did, yeah. Yeah, exactly. But anyway, let's have a look, Tomás. Let's talk hurling first of all. Just a review of last weekend and looking through the fixtures and the results, et cetera, and so forth. I suppose from your point of view, the one that you would have been interested in was Cork and Kilkenny, of course. And now this was a 1-point game, Kilkenny winning it by a point. But at the same time, there was a bit of kind of, I won't say whinging, but like the Cork manager afterwards said, we need to figure it out, really.
A lot of whinging and ranting from Cork fellas on Saturday night, Michael.
Yeah. but clearly it was an actual fact. One of the reporters on the match, reading the papers the following day, described some of the Cork players behaving like traffic cones.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. With yeah, look, Mike, fair Michael. Or fair? Yeah, look, I was at the match, right? And I was there, and look, the one thing that kind of buzzed me up was the size of the crowd. I think close to 16,500 for our National Hurling League match on a Saturday night. It showed the appetite that was there. I didn't think there was a fortune kick any supporters there. It was the majority of Cork. So it shows the level of hunger that there is for success, but also the level of support there that's for the hurling team as well, right? And that's big numbers. And it was an awful Saturday here with rain. And look, and I would probably put another 2,000 or 3,000 people off going on Saturday night because it was being televised live. And you could have got close to 20,000, which would have been a fantastic crowd. But you got the sense with the Cork crowd, even after 20 minutes of the game, they weren't happy. This isn't going the way it was planned. We were expecting a big reaction after the Clare match, losing the way they did against Clare. And to be honest, Michael, if Kilkenny were 10 points ahead at halftime, I would have had no argument with it. They were that far ahead. They used possession much better than Cork did. They had got incredible scores all over the field. And Cork got a goal just a couple of minutes before halftime that kind of put a sense of some purpose in the score. They say that there was something to fight for in the second half, but Kilkenny won that first half period. And I think that was the one thing that annoyed Cork, that I know it's early days, it's February, but the amount, the space and the room and the time that the Kilkenny guys had to work the ball out from the goalkeeper, out through the defence, through the lines. There was two-on-ones all over the field and nobody picking them up and nobody within 10, 15 yards of them, and they're scoring at will. And kind of people were upset about that because they felt that's, we need more than that. We need a bigger commitment than that. And even at stages in the game, I mean, look, it's the modern game of hurling that we're looking at. We probably had 12 fellas behind the ball, even from halfway line back, with limited numbers up front, and you see Patrick Horgan inside, and there's 3 Kilkenny guys around him. And no matter what, you're Messi or Ronaldo or Mo Salah, there's nothing you can do if there's 3-3 versus 1. And that disappoints me in terms of the result. It's the game plan we're using and the way we're playing the game kind of disappoints me. I thought we would have learned over the last 2 to 3 years that we've done something similar. And I would have said this to you on a few occasions, Michael. It's more now like the opposition know how Cork are going to set up and how they actually approach the game when they come. And again, we had a good number of turnovers. We lost possession, and that's the disappointing side of it. And I know Pat Ryan said afterwards, look, it's not about the league for him this year. They went down that road last year. Yeah, you know, and we're disappointed in a league semi-final last year. And probably more emphasis now is going to be towards championships. Still early days, but disappointing, yeah, definitely.
I totally understand all that aspect of it. I totally appreciate the fact that you can't, as you said yourself, Tomás, there, read too much into league results this time of the year.
No.
But having said that, stats are still stats, you know, and this is Cork at the bottom of the standings now in Division 1A. 2 games, 2 defeats, and that creates, whether you like it or not, a certain anxiety.
It does, Michael. And the big thing there, like from a car perspective, is like you're trying to get continuity, you're trying to get consistency, you're trying to get a team that will gel together. And you use the league at times to give guys an opportunity. But when you lose matches, Michael, what happens next week when they sit down to pick a team for the next day? Are they going to change again? Is there more faces going to come into the equation? So are you going to get that consistency? Have you that time then between now and Championship to turn around? And look, they're at 0 points at the end of the table. Offaly above them, Wexford above them. They have those matches to come. Their next game is Waterford. There is a chance to turn it around, but you look at it on that side of it and you say, look, yeah, Sean Toomey was probably a bright spark for them. Substitutions, Mark Coleman coming on made a big difference. John Milrick made a difference. But like the standout performer for me was Kilkenny's Adrian Mullen. I thought he was absolutely brilliant talking to some of the Kilkenny guys afterwards, the time and effort that he's putting into his game at this stage is seemingly fantastic. And it showed, I mean, his point scoring, his vision was fantastic. And if he can contribute there in that forward line with the other guys, like, I mean, Kilkenny not going to be far away because, the hurling they played, it's a different from the old style Kilkenny that we've seen. They've adopted a change over the last number of years and with Derek Ling, particularly as well, and Conor Feeling as coach, right? They go the shorter route if they need to, but there are times, Michael, when they go long and they need to go long, and they did that on occasions and they mixed it up big time. And Cork weren't like that. We were too short. And like they brought in Walter Walsh, caught a ball at the edge of the square, probably should have had a penalty, missed an opportunity for goal as well. And they were from direct balls inside as well. So there is a mixture with Kilkenny, and they're looking very, very sharp at the moment as well.
Go on, Mark.
Yeah. Could I just come across that, Tomás? I watched the game, and again, I love watching hurling, but I couldn't get over the lack of effort and intensity in the first, say, 25 minutes from Cork. Yeah, I mean, for whatever reason, they just didn't seem to kind of get to the pitch of the game or have the spirit necessary to go in and contest 50-50 balls. And you're talking about, you know, Cork and Kilkenny, they top of the tree in hurling as such. What shocked me the other day in reading it, I didn't realise that, is it 20 years since Cork last won an All-Ireland in senior hurling?
2005, Martin, yeah. 2005.
Yeah, and again, is it 10 years since Kilkenny won an All-Ireland hurling final?
It's 8 years, I think, with Kilkenny, yeah.
Years, yeah. And there are considerable gaps, like, for two teams with their traditions and with their history. And
absolutely, Martin, right. I mean, whatever about Kilkenny from Cork, it's been a disaster, to be honest with you, you know. Who would have said back in 2005 that we would be waiting this long for an All Ireland? You know, we were there in 2013 and just lost in the replay to Clare and probably had that match won. But no, it's not good. But I'm optimistic, right? In terms of, I look at teams at the moment, Michael, and I say to myself, who wants to win the National Hurling League this stage the way we've spoken about for the last 12 months in terms of the compactness of the season? I know you must show a bit of form, but if you're about to go to a league semi-final and a league final this year and with tough matches, you're out 2 weeks afterwards into a Munster championship campaign. And I personally would love to see Cork perform better in a Munster championship campaign to get out of that group, to get him to the All-Ireland series. And if that's kind of saying, we're not going to get to a league semi-final, yeah, you've got to play better, way better than they played last Saturday night and against Clare. But I would back the management to say that this is how they're going to plan it this time round. It's going to be different from where they were last year, because championship, it's be an end all down here in Cork, to be honest with you. You're only be remembered for most of the championship campaigns and All-Ireland series, right? And I know it would be nice to win a National League, but it's about All-Irelands. And Pat Ryan was very clear about that afterwards. He could only be judged as a manager by getting these guys out of the Munster campaign, out of that round robin, and into the All-Ireland series.
But it is interesting also, though, Tomás, that if you look at the Division 1B standings,
yes,
Limerick, the All-Ireland champions, they're up at the top of the table, along with Tip. And Galway are up there, thereabouts as well. And then I suppose down the other end, Antrim and Westmeath, kind of, as you would expect, kind of done. Although, in the case of Antrim and Westmeath last weekend, Westmeath put up a good effort against Limerick, and Antrim should have beaten Dublin. In fact, they let that one slip through their fingers almost literally at the end.
Yeah, they did, Michael, up the score, and that was 17 points to 120 for Westmead against Limerick, and Westmead led for long periods in that game, and it was only the last 10 minutes that Limerick kind of pushed away on that side of it. And then you look at Antrim and Dublin, it was 119 to 120, right, in favour of Dublin, and Antrim looked to have that game won as well. It's a massive win for me, I don't know, because there had been a lot of searing questions asked in terms of if Antrim had beaten Dublin, and Dublin were down the bottom of the pile and Antrim above them with the 2 points, right? So, and look, the game of the weekend probably was Tipperary versus Galway, Michael, in Torres, and 126 to 24 points. I'm sure Liam Cal will be very, very excited with the amount of or the good performance that he's getting, blooding a lot of new players. And like, he's been involved at under minor level and under 21 level himself for a couple of years. So he's bringing a lot of those guys through. And I suppose, Martin, some one of the stats we spoke about last week and what I was looking at was for the likes of Clare, who were performing brilliantly as well, and the great win of Waterford was, like, Garrod O'Connor, who played midfield with Tip last weekend, last Sunday. That was his ninth game in 31 days between UL and Tip.
Wow.
And I think something similar with Mac Rogers from Clare as well, in terms of Fitzgibbon Cup hurling and National League campaigns as well. So, like, I mean, we're talking about player welfare and player burnout, but the players themselves, I saw an interview there where they were interviewed. And they said, what else would we like to be doing? We love playing matches. We want to be involved. We get a break from the county train on Tuesday night because we're with the cottages. But it's still not asking an awful lot of amateur players in my book, to be honest with you. Nine games in 31 days. That's incredible.
That's a lot. That's a lot. There's no question about that. Martin, let's talk a bit of football.
Yes.
Because, of course, it's a football weekend coming up. And couple of interesting games, to say at the very least, were there in Division One. I suppose for me, the one that catches the eye, for most people, the one that catches the eye is Kerry and Mayo.
Yeah, an interesting one, Kerry and Mayo. I mean, Mayo started quite well. They have managed full points so far, even though the last night out against Galway, or against Dublin rather, I thought they were very poor at times. And Dublin, I thought in general, were the better team over the course of the match. But two things happened. They got a goal at the right time in the second half from an unlikely source, Stephen Cohn. And, you know, we talk about formulaic football. We talk about the structure and order in games, Michael. But in the last minute of the game, Ryan O'Donoghue was out on the sideline taking a free kick. Or he was arguing with, well, maybe arguing is overstating it, with Killian O'Connor as to who should take it. But with a little bit of improvisation and risk-taking, he put the ball, he saw his moment, he put the ball to Fergal Boland, who just happened to wander loose. The Dublin players were kind of intent on, shall we say, covering the free kick. Boland just managed to get loose. Donoghue saw him with the ball, pinpoint accuracy, and the ball went over the bar, and Mayo won it by a point. And in many respects, you could kind of define it as a smash and grab raid. But nonetheless, it was on the basis of perseverance alone, Michael, I felt that Mayo deserved it. But they're going to Kerry at the weekend. Now, it's a rare one in some respects. Mayo destroyed Kerry in the league here last year. I think they beat them by 7 points, having been 11 up at half time. They beat them in May, I think, in the championship in Killarney. It was the first time that Kerry had been beaten in Killarney in 28 years, Michael. And yeah. So this weekend, I think, Kerry, you know, they lost their opening game against Derry down there. They won't want to actually kind of lose 3 in a row on home ground. And I think they give an indication of where they're going to be, Michael, from what we saw the last day, insofar as they brought in the Cliffords, they brought in Ty Morley, they brought in Adrian Spillane at half-time. Guys, I think maybe that John O'Connor might have actually wished to hold back a little bit longer. But I think they're going to make life very difficult for Mayo. And basically, I think it'll be the game of the weekend, Michael. And for Mayo, it'll kind of, shall we say, define a lot. It'll give them a realistic, shall we say, sense of where they're at. But they'll be keen to build on the winning habit. And their midfield and defence is good, but like Mayo teams for a while, I still think they have a lot of work to do up front. But I'm excited about the game. Sean O'Shea showed great form for Kerry the other day at full forward. I think he got 8-6 from play. And with the two Cliffords in alongside him, this makes for a very entertaining game on Saturday night in Tralee. And it's one that Jack O'Connor certainly would not be keen to go become second best in.
No, I'm sure he will not. But also looking, Martin, at the Division 1 table, down at the bottom of the table, the only team with no points are Dublin.
Yeah, it's amazing. Like, I mean, the Dublin games today, I mean, as I said, this at the last day out against Mayo, I thought they were the better team for long periods, and had Mayo basically where they wanted them for long periods. But that concession of a goal from, you know, an unlikely source, and again, the little bit of carelessness at the end. And what you saw late in the game that day, Michael, from Dublin, which was unusual, there was a little bit of panic. There was a lack of composure when chances kind of presented themselves. And when you couple that then with the surprise defeat at home to Monaghan, where Monaghan, in fact, put three goals past them, they will be very, very keen to get back in winning ways at the weekend against Roscommon. And, you know, it's only the third game of the league. There's another, whatever it is, four after this before the league is completed. Dublin did play in the second division last year and went on to win it, went on to win the All-Ireland. But I just sense they'll want to kind of reclaim winning ways. They'll probably introduce a couple of new players, maybe, to you know, to support the experienced group that were there. Incidentally, from that experienced group, there was no James McCarthy there the last night. I gather his wife was expecting, and he stayed at home, understandably. But you had a young fella came in that did impress me, even though he missed a good opportunity of a point. An O'Cossey Byrne lad, big. I think that was his name. Now I may be wrong on that. Big, strong wing forward. And I think he's somebody, you know, I'd like to see again from a Dublin perspective. He's somebody I think that's exciting and has a lot of potential. But no, they'll be keen to win. Roscommon, probably, you know, the last day against Galway, I gather from people who are at it, I was speaking to somebody who was at it, it was virtually impossible to play football in Hyde Park the last day with the wind that was there. So, but nonetheless, they got a point out of it. And they were beaten just by 3 points against Tyrone. They had, do you remember that game last summer where they held on to the balls for six solid minutes against Roscommon or against Dublin? And caused, it's very, very seldom you hear a crowd booing a team, but the Dublin, shall we say, supporters that they booed Roscommon because of the way they played. And Roscommon will try to do the same thing. They will try to frustrate them as much as they possibly can for the entirety of the game. And just at the moment, I think Roscommon, okay, Dermot Mort is doing well. They have Ben O'Carroll back in the forward line. I think it's Conor Cox came in the last day and scored 5 points for them. I think four of them okay from frees. But I still think they will do their best to frustrate Dublin. But I cannot see Dublin letting this one slip. They'll want to just build the winning habit. And, you know, when you think of it this way, Michael, their preparation for the All-Ireland series is through the league, because they're not going to be realistically tested, as far as I'm concerned, in the Leinster Championship this year, in the way that we're looking at Leinster teams performing in the league at the moment.
And to must bring you in on this, because if you cast your eye down to Division 2, you're looking at your own county, Cork footballers in this case, down the bottom of the table. They are in a bit of a precarious situation here.
They are, Michael, yeah. And the two losses, it's probably worrying times for John Cleary. And, you know, I was with John recently there and having a chat with him. And,
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
The time and effort that they're putting into it is just incredible. And they've Kevin Walsh involved as well. But look, Martin, you'll probably see them as self play as well. I mean, the concern is there to lose another match. You're put yourself in danger of... right? You know, and I mentioned that to you the last time, Martin. Like, I don't agree with that system, to be honest with you, because we can't afford to allow Meath, and we can't afford Cork or anybody else like that to be going down at that level. It's not good if you have a sponsor or for gate receipts or matches and stuff like that as well. And you know, I worry about that. I do worry about it, to be honest with you.
Well, there's a couple of things I would question on that. Like, when you think of Cork's first two games that they had in Division 2 this year, they had to travel up to Ballybofey for the first game. And, you know, Donegal scored 21 times on them, I think a goal and 20 points. Then they had to travel to Louth for the second game. Now, I don't know who's in charge of scheduling, but I think that was damnably unfair on Cork. You know, home and away, I think for the most part, certainly over the first two games, should be the norm. But to me, the most exciting and intriguing division in the football world at the moment is the second division. Because what you have, I found it very unusual this week, Moss and Michael. I find it very unusual for a county chairman, as in Mick Gorman and Kildare, openly being critical of his manager, Glenn Ryan. And, you know, he was just saying openly that he had spoken with Glenn Ryan. He was annoyed with the results. The supporters were annoyed with the results. But something like that, you know, a discordant note like that, I think pulls everybody down. I think, anyway, it creates a distrust then between the management and the executive and the county board. It adds to an element of tension to everything. It increases the pressure on the team. And I think that unity of purpose that you need is scuppered by doing something like
Martin,
that.
Yeah, Martin, that's interesting. And Michael, it's the same, because I think there was something similar here in Cork over the weekend as well, in terms of that result against Kilkenny in the hurling, and Pat Ryan kind of saying, look, focus is on championship. We have to win a couple of league matches, but the big focus is going to be on championship. And I don't think Kevin O'Donovan, the CEO of Cork GAA, was too impressed with that as well. And I mean, I suppose when you come to gate receipts from the league are more beneficial to county teams, I think, than the gate receipts from championship.
Because it goes to provincial, yes,
is what I gather, right? And where the probably chairman is coming and the CEO of Cork GAA is coming is in terms of you need to be performing at the highest levels to get your big crowds in February and March. You need to be getting the top opposition down to get big numbers attending gates and get gate receipts as well, right? You know, so they're coming from one side, and then you have a manager trying to prepare a team to say, okay, let's go through the phases of the National League. Let's get maybe a couple of wins under our belt, but the big emphasis is going to be championship time, you know? So there is a balance there, definitely, you know?
Yeah, but you made the point earlier, Tomás, how bad it would be for football if the likes in Cork and Kildare. Yeah, but the reality is, unless they pick up points fairly soon, the top four teams or the top five teams in second division might be the only ones that actually qualify for Sam Maguire. Like, say, for example, if Meath are in the bottom three, Meath are in the race for Sam next year on the basis of their Tailteann Cup win. The way the Munster Championship is run this year, you're going to have a Division 3 or Division 2, Division 3 or Division 4 team in the Munster final, and they'll be a second tier team. So you could have the second from bottom and the third from bottom team in Division 2 playing Tasman Cup. And as we speak, the two teams that are there are Kildare, Meath are in third from bottom, but it could well be Cork and Kildare end up in the Tasman Cup, the way things are going, unless they reclaim the winning habit. Now, Cork are playing Cavan at the weekend.
That's right, Cork, yes, Cavan.
And like Cavan are really under new management, I gather they're really playing good football and were unlucky enough to lose the last hit to Donegal. Kildare, the big game to me at the weekend, and I was asking, my daughter lives up in in Meath, and I was asking about the importance of the Meath versus Louth game. Now, Colm O'Rourke was very, very down after their defeat the last day to Armagh. They were destroyed by Armagh. And like they are, like they have 1 point, okay, from their opening game against Fermanagh that they would have expected to win. But this derby game, Meath and Louth, is as, shall we say, edgy and as kind of as on the, as you could wish to get. And here Brennan and James McCartan and Niall Moynihan, who are involved with Louth, will want to put one over on Meath and show to the tide is turned. And Colm will want to establish form, will want to get back to winning ways. But this is going to be, I think, one of the games of the weekend to watch.
Martin, could I just ask you, in terms of this Tasman Cup, I know Colm came out last year because he was being criticised, and he came out very strong in kind of in favour of the Tasman Cup. A couple of Cork supporters have said to me, wouldn't Cork football be better off going down and competing in the Tasman Cup and maybe winning a Tasman Cup and then get themselves up the ladder after that? But surely, be the God, like Meath or a Kildare or a Cork going down, that can't be good for football.
Well, again, in theory, it can't be good for football, but unless football is thriving within the county at club level, unless all elements of it are working together, then there is no guarantee that teams are going to stay at the top. Okay, I agree with you. You want to see, like historically, they are the best, but at present, Cork and Meath and Kildare have put themselves in situations where they're going to be judged as second rate unless they get back into winning habits. And it's what might happen by them going into the Tasman Cup, they're bringing it on themselves. Okay, you can say that Kildare, for example, this year haven't got a home ground in Newbridge. That they're playing a lot of. I think their first home game was played in Carlow. But unless club football, for example, in a county is strong, unless there is a unity, a purpose there between everybody, and unless teams continue to kind of perform and develop winning habits, the inevitable kind of upshot of the lot is that they will go down to the Tasman Cup. Yes, in theory, it may not be good,
Martin, right?
but in reality,
Castlehaven performing very, very well in the All Ireland Series club.
You have, right? Yes. But right, how many of those are going to come into the Cork team, do you think?
Well, you'll have three or four of them involved there, right? So, and again, they're not available at the moment, right? In terms of, you're penalising somebody that has had a success at club level for a county team that are not available, right? And it's, it doesn't stick well with me, to be honest with you, where this Tasman Cup is coming about.
Yeah, well, you're speaking as a Cork man with Cork in mind. You take Mickey Hart, like up in Derry. Mickey Hart, 6 days after his boys won the All Ireland, he had them playing in their opening league game.
They played their opening league game against Kerry.
Kerry, that's right. And they played the last day. They were outstanding in that derby the last day against Tyrone. And basically, they've shown a willingness and an appetite to play, to represent their county. Probably Mickey is kind of insisting on it to a degree. But, you know, you just ask yourself maybe the question logically, why weren't the Castlehaven guys prepared to do the same thing? I don't know. I can't answer that. But certainly in Derry, the lads up there were prepared to go out the following week. play with the county, and the county has benefited as a consequence. And the Castlehaven lads need to start probably now representing the county if they're picked. And it's not a case of waiting around a couple of weeks. This league passes very, very quickly. It's finished by the end of March. And unless they kept cracking very quickly, there ain't going to be a race for Sam Maguire later on.
Can I swing the conversation, lads, around again to hurling for a moment? And Tomás, just ask you about one thing that we were reading during the week, which was Shane Dowling was making comments about the inability of the GAA, or not the inability, but the fact that they haven't appointed a hurling development officer since the last incumbent left the post. And he's been very critical about that. Have you any thoughts on that?
Yeah, Michael, there's a lot of rants have come over the last 2 weeks, to be honest with you, right? Donalogue had a big one on Saturday night on RT television. I didn't see it live, but I went back on the clips, and he's obviously he's president of the GPA, and he's questioning authorities as well. I do agree with Shane Dowling in terms of the hurling development side of it. Yeah, I think it's critical. I think it should happen. And like you would be asking in terms of people that would in the GPA, in terms of if they're keen on something like that, why isn't it being pushed further? Why isn't there being more questions being asked of it? Because it's important, Michael. And you know, you had Martin Fogarty there, who was kind of there before, Liam Sheedy, who was there, and anything that different that they can bring to the game, or insight to the game, or sit down and speak to people about the game, and particularly the counties from we'd say with the lesser success. And you know, I watched the league Sunday, and you know, the interview that was there with Duane Cantwell, and you know, the Westmead manager, and you know, the Loud player, and you're kind of saying to themselves, yeah, every opportunity should be given to them, right? And I remember in the past, I played National League matches against Westmead. You know, we played against Carlow in games, and have they improved even since then, Michael? They were at an acceptable standard. But is the appetite, as the lad said, is the appetite there within the GAA to bring them to another level, to bring them up another level? Can they go another notch? Is the appetite within the county to do that, right? And I think there's... Even though people will say hurling is in a very good place, some people will say in other places it isn't really, to be honest with you, right? So, and you're looking at the same four or five teams every year coming to the forefront and being there. And look, it's a huge topic, and I'm sure it's one that's going to be out around the place for the next couple of weeks. You know, I was laughing today, Michael. We had a big debate over the last couple of weeks in terms of Super Value Park in Queeve. I believe once Park in Waterford.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
in terms of the naming rights, they're looking at a company called Hawaii, not Hawaii. Hawaii.
How are you?
Hawaii. A Chinese company. So things are looking up, right? And
fine feather spies and flaws.
But. And I look, I don't know, and it's important, I think, for the likes of Waterford as well. They're putting a lot of time and effort into Walsh Park. They're developing the ground there again. But again, naming rights is going to be part and parcel of that as well. And for me, it's great to see as well. So, look, we're at the time of the year, everyone. The rants are going to come out from everywhere. And I think Dunlop was a bit hit and miss, to be honest, which I think he contradicted himself on a good few occasions. He was getting out that we have too many stadiums, and he was getting out of go Parky Queeve and that's there and stuff like that. And the reality is Parky Queeve was condemned. It would not have been opened again. The actual health and safety standards that were there would not allow that Parky Queeve to be open. So it had no other choice but the metal ball to come in and knock it down. Yeah, it was overspent. The debt is still there at 30 million, but it's a fantastic arena. I've been there last Saturday night in massive, massive comfort to be able to watch a match with 16,500. You saw the success. And that's going to follow suit. Turles is going to get a big revamp. Martin, you're senior up your country in terms of football grounds and stuff like that. It's the norm. Yeah. It's the expected to get your supporter going now. You've got to go. and have comfort at the ground to be able to enjoy your match day experience and stuff like that as well. So I think Dumbo was out of order there.
And if you look at that,
by the way, gentlemen, just to mention there on that point about sponsorship and companies and so forth, the prospective sponsors of Walsh Park and Waterford, Tomas, that you were mentioning, I think they're Korean. In fairness, if they're prepared to put their money in and all that kind of stuff, you know, fair enough. The one, I'm going back, Jeannie Mac, a lot of years here now, and this wasn't about GEA at the time, but do you remember there was a lot of debate back in the day in soccer, domestic soccer in Ireland, when the league was sponsored by Kentucky Fried Chicken.
That's right, and a very
reputable company, of course. But I think people took a lot of amusement out of the fact that it was called the Kentucky Fried Chicken League.
I remember that.
Mr. Grace, I think owned the Kentucky Fried Chicken brand.
It's incidentally going back to Tomás's point, Michael, for a second. I mean, one of the projects that Eamon Ryan came out with over the weekend, and again, this would go up Donal Og's nose a little bit, is that they are kind of highlighting the fact that they're going to continue with large-scale projects on ground infrastructure around the country, and they're going to actually continue to support counties that want to create their own centres of excellence, because players now want the best. Supporters want the best. And like, okay, I was watching Donal Og, and I saw the fact that he figured of the 40 million or so that was being spent, only 7 million went to the players as such. But nonetheless, if you haven't got a good quality county ground at the moment, to accommodate the people who pay good money to come through the turnstiles, then it's going to discourage people from coming. And I think the onus is on kind of, you know, county boards. I know they're under huge pressure, but there's no doubt about it. In Eamon Ryan's annual report, there isn't going to be any cutback in this. They're going to continue helping county grounds to develop their infrastructures by way of centres of excellence and by way of grounds.
Of course they are. And I suppose, gentlemen, part of the point about all of this debate is the fact that these days in Ireland, a lot of sports fans can jump on aeroplanes and go across the water and attend Premier League matches in whatever your favourite is, Old Trafford Stadium and that kind of stuff, where they see the best of facilities. I mean, Old Trafford, Manchester United's ground, it's a fantastic stadium. And yet, at the same time, they're talking about knocking you down.
Like, I've been in the Emirates, Michael. I've been in the Emirates where I've flown out on a Saturday morning here from Knock Airport.
Gone over
there and been back in the house here the following morning at 11 o'clock.
That's my point. Exactly.
You know, it's so easy to do that. Just one of my neighbours has season tickets there. And every now and again, if he's away somewhere, he might just say, do you want to drop over? And it's so simple to do it, Michael. And again, you get the best of facilities there. It's so accessible by way of flight and by way of train. And but it just on a different scale, though, but nonetheless, on the basis of crowd comfort, grounds that people come to should be of a standard that kind of, in a sense, encourages people to come to rather than the opposite.
Exactly, because a lot of people who go to sports events these days, they're not necessarily diehard.
That's right.
Whatever they are, but they want the day out, you know, and they want, as you guys said, the facilities around, you know, whether it's Croke Park or the Aviva or whatever the case is, you know, and just the enjoyable day out and the enjoyable experience. And of course, that's the way it should be.
I agree with you, Michael. And the previous weekend, you had Munster there and the Crusaders in Páirc Uí, but 42,000 people there.
And what was lovely about that to us actually was Graham Rowntree's comments afterwards that more games there.
Yeah, the feedback from around was just incredible. And not just alone because it was 42,000 in Páirc Uí, but you take the hospitality sector that has suffered greatly because of COVID and stuff like that as well. Places were full, bars, restaurants, a lot of money being spent in the city and stuff as well. And look, that's kind of a regular occurrence. Michael, you probably see it in Dublin more than I see it in terms of you have the rugby internationals, you have the soccer internationals, you have a lot of the bigger sporting events between the Aviv and Croke Park. And like on a given Saturday in February, the first week of February, that you get 42,000 people in the park in Aviv. And like non-GA people, the rugby guys down there were just raving about the facility, raving about how good it was, the atmosphere that was there, and how they enjoyed the Park Equiv experience, right? Which is fantastic. And the more and more we get of that, I think the better for everybody.
Yeah, but Michael, I remember a couple of two weeks earlier when Dublin came to town here, officially the attendance was 14,800. There was about 5,000 youngsters in that aren't actually registered when they're coming through the turnstiles. But it was like Christmas Eve in town here. It was like Christmas Eve. Pubs, restaurants, what it means economically to the town is unquantifiable. And like nights like that are so important. But again, to attract people, isn't it a hell of a sight better to have a ground that is attractive, a ground that is accessible, and a ground that offers comfort to a degree? Although admittedly, like maybe we're not on the same scale as Parky Keefe, but it does kind of encourage people to come, and that's the way it ought to be.
Yeah, and look, the other side of it, Martin, you mentioned, look, Don Logue said there's only 7 million going from the 40 million that's been spent going into the player side of it. And look, we've argued that point. Where's this all going to go? Is this kind of starting the debate in terms of players should be paid? If that's the case, and Don Logue wants, let him come out and say that, right?
Because, we had that commentary 2 weeks ago, and I said, I hope the day doesn't come. But to me, the genie's out of the bottle at this stage. The only people that aren't being paid in the dressing room are players. Let's be blunt about it. And someday, sooner than later, players are going to say, are going to stand up and just going to say, we're not playing unless you're going to give us a certain allowance. Okay, they get a reasonable allowance. I think they get €300 for boots. They get all kinds of things, different things like that. I think they get 70 cents a kilometre, as far as I know, for expenses. But I think they will look for something more than that sooner rather than later, the way the whole thing is going right now.
I know. I suppose that this debate can be contentious, broadly speaking, about various aspects. But isn't it a good thing that if the game is in such good health, then there's money coming into it, and if there's money coming into it, then it's a positive going forward. You know, it's a question then of how you spend the money, I suppose, and all that. I better close off on this. I dream of Genie.
I suppose we won't see.
Have we gone too far?
I don't think will we see Davy Fitz gone to Korea for a training session, Michael, or China.
I'd say, of course, if he's looking for a win out of those lads, he'd bring them anywhere. Korea. I'd say at this stage, seeing Tomas, who he's facing next in the league.
Hawaii wants Park against Super Valley Park.
I love your pronunciation.
he'd take those lads either to South or North Korea.
I think, Michael, we've done badly political. We've raised a genie out of professionalism.
As I said to you, Martin, I dream of genie and I leave it on that.
All right, Michael. Thanks, Tomas. Thank you.
Thanks, lads. Thanks for your time.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Talk to you again the next time.